Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk. Ask the GP on Lunchtime Live.
Dr. Anita Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is here to answer all of your health questions today. Anita, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. 087 1400 106, that's the number if you have a query for Nina. Before we get to listener questions, story recently, Nina, about 1 in 7 women in Ireland actually avoid going to their GP to... They're embarrassed about discussing symptoms, particularly around gynecological issues. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, I always say to patients, like, you shouldn't be embarrassed to discuss anything. And honestly, there isn't a single thing you could say to your doctor that they probably haven't heard before. So, I mean, especially as a GP, hopefully you have a GP that you have some kind of relationship with. And I suppose this is where it comes back to having a regular doctor or practice that you attend. I know life is busy and a lot of people, you know, from a convenience point of view, they might go to online doctors or they might go to other people, but you don't get to build up that kind of relationship where you feel comfortable talking about things. And when you go to a practice, I mean, you might see one or two or maybe three doctors in the practice if there's a few, but you've probably met them before. You've probably had some kind of interaction. And the most important thing is to have a GP that you feel comfortable talking to. Mm-hmm. If you have a GP that you don't feel comfortable talking to about anything, you probably should find another GP. I know that's not always, you know, easy to do as saying it, but it's really, really important that if you have something you're worried about, no matter where it is on your body, what it has to do with, that you're happy talking about it. And the majority of things are very manageable. But it is really, really important that you go in. And also don't just kind of, you know, throw it in at the very end of a consultation, because we sometimes see that people come in and they'll list minor things and then suddenly at the end they throw in probably the main reason they came in. You know, it's important that you dedicate time, put a consult aside. You know, we always have our reception team kind of ask patients, what are you coming in about? And they don't mean you to go into your full history, because I know some people are a bit uncomfortable talking over the phone about stuff. But even just to say it's a women's health issue, or, you know, for men, it's a men's health issue, whatever, just so we have a rough idea. And that's to help us guide how long the consult needs to be, because we book longer consults for some things. Or maybe direct you to one doctor over another who might have a special interest, like we've doctors with special interest in skin and stuff, and we'll direct it around. But like, don't sit at home about something you're worried about. Don't go on to Dr. Google to try and figure it out, because chances are what you get there won't necessarily be the best information.
Okay.
And sometimes you end up being terrified about something that turns out to be really simple.
087 1400 106. Listener has a 16-year-old daughter who suffers extremely bad with back pain and stomach pain during her period. Even Ponstan and Salpinine don't work. She also gets very bad back pain randomly throughout the month. She feels bloated about 75% of the time, even when she doesn't have her period. She's tried the pill, didn't like it due to weight gain. She's extremely sporty. It's now stopping her playing matches when it turns, which in turn makes her feel down. She absolutely loves football. We've been to the doctor several times. We feel nothing is working. Is there a specialist in this area that could be a good option?
Yes, so there are gynecologists who specialise in adolescent gynecology. So if she's having very painful periods that aren't being managed simply with things prescribed by her GP, she should absolutely ask to be referred on to an adolescent gynae clinic. You know, endometriosis is something that can cause severe pain, painful periods. If you have bloating, at the very least, she should have a pelvic ultrasound to make sure she doesn't have any cysts or anything there that could be causing some of these symptoms. So, you know, there are, the ultrasound can be organised by the GP, but no, there are a couple of, at least two I can think of, adolescent gynaecologists in Dublin. And I'm sure there are some in clinics around the country, and your GP can absolutely refer you to those.
They'll refer you on.
Yep.
Listeners, 47, male, normally healthy, but suffers terribly with fatigue. It's actually taken over and now ruining my life, completely and utterly exhausted and tired. I've very bad muscle tiredness, but no pain though. I do have a very stress-free lifestyle, no particularly difficult job, mentally or physically, so it's not coming from there. I have been to the doctor over the years with no success. Borderline low B12 is the most that's ever come up in the bloods. Everything else is okay. Current GP referred me to get a scope down. All okay with my gut. It's now completely unbearable for me. All I want to do is sleep. I can sleep any amount and always still wake up exhausted.
So people feeling tired all the time is a really, really common presentation in general practice. And you know, we talk about psychological or physical fatigue, and it does take a bit of teasing out to figure out what the cause is. But one I would really say, you know, that jumps out at me in this one, and it's in men particularly, and particularly if they're anyways overweight, is sleep apnea. People often don't think, because they think they're sleeping, they go to bed, especially if they're not in a relationship and they don't have a partner in the bed, they might be snoring, there might be pauses in their breathing, and that's going to leave you feeling exhausted during the day. So someone who's feeling absolutely exhausted during the day, who could fall asleep at the drop of a hat, and again, if he visits his GP can do blood pressure, height, weight, things like that, that can point towards that. But you can have a sleep study done to make sure that you're not studying from sleep apnea, and often treating that can really help.
So try and get that ruled out, is your advice
there.
Yeah,
and someone who's had, seems to have all the bloods done and scopes done, and they're feeling absolutely crippling fatigue and they're falling asleep at the drop of a hat, you know, you definitely want to make sure this isn't just missed sleep apnea.
53, female. For the past 2 months, I've had a rolling punching sensation at the back of my thigh. It comes and goes during the day, but it's actually very painful when it happens. Any advice?
It's very hard just with the detail of that to figure out what's going on. Pains in your leg, particularly if they happen when you're walking, you know, particularly if you're a smoker or someone with any other vascular issues, that can be a sign of narrowing in the arteries. So the same way we talk about, you know, heart being pain in the chest when exercising, pain in the legs when exercising can be a sign of narrowing in the arteries. So go along, have a chat with your GP. They can check the pulses in your legs. You know, simple things like you can have, depends on where in the leg, you can get a thing called a Baker's cyst behind your knee. Sometimes people get sort of a stabbing pain from the back of that. I can't really think of too many other things, but just go along and have a chat with your GP.
I recently heard a frightening feature, says this texter, on the radio about penile cancer. What signs should men look out for?
So actually, that's great that they ask that, because men don't often ask about these things. No. Penile cancer is, it's, you know, it's not the most common cancer, but it can happen, and it often presents as a sore or an area of skin on the penis that's inflamed or irritated and doesn't seem to settle. You'll often find that men, you know, they've initially thought maybe they'd thrush or through maybe some other infection. But what I would say, you know, to anyone, if you have an area of skin on your body anywhere, doesn't matter where on your body it is, if it's not getting better, if there's an area that's inflamed or irritated or it's an ulcer or it's sore and it's just not getting better, you need to go to your doctor. So penile cancer, like any kind of cancer on the skin of some sort, you know, can be there for a long time. Some of them are very slow growing, some can become quite nasty. And caught early, nearly all of them are very treatable. So this is one thing that you should not be embarrassed about going to your doctor about.
My daughter has a fungal infection in her big toe. What's the best way to treat it? Are the skull toe treatment kits beneficial or a waste of money?
So fungal nail infections, a lot of people, when they have crumbling or cracking toes, they think it's fungal. I always think it is worth going to your doctor, let them look at it, because damage to the toenail can look a bit like a fungus. Obviously, you can go to a chiropodist as well. And what we often say is to let the nail grow a bit, cut a clipping off, and we can send the clipping off and see does fungus actually grow. Often before they come, they've tried the stuff you can buy over the counter, and the pharmacist can definitely advise you. What I would say is, when you're treating a fungal infection, the bit that's damaged isn't going to change. What you're going to see is that the new nail grows healthy, and it takes 3 to 6 months of treatment for nail infection, because you have to let the whole nail grow, and everyone's nail grows at a different rate. So if you've started using the treatment and you're noticing that the base of the nail is starting to look healthy, then that treatment is probably working, but you need to keep going with it till the whole nail grows.
Okay.
But going to your doctor and having a sample you sent off can be helpful.
Yeah. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. This listener is 38, male. I've had this issue since I was 12. Every single morning I wake up with a ton of phlegm just sitting in my mouth and on my throat. I've taken multiple different medications. I had 3 rhinoplasty surgeries. I've also tried multiple different diets to fix it. Doctors just keep referring me and telling me I'm fine. It's a complete joke. I'm wondering if you have any advice.
I'm really sorry. This sounds really stressful. It sounds like he has had his sinuses and his stomach checked out. And you can think, if someone's coming up into the mouth, it's coming from one of 3 places, either your back of your nose down, your stomach up, or possibly your lungs up. I'm assuming he's had his lungs listened to and doesn't have any kind of chronic infection in his lung. But he may be refluxing at night, or he may just have a lot of kind of nasal secretions. So it's not just the surgery. You often use sprays or rinses to keep the sinuses clear, especially before bed. But I'm really sorry. I can't think of anything else specific to add to that. Yeah.
My son got impetigo and had an antibiotic. It did clear up. It's after coming back again. Any thoughts?
So impetigo is a bacterial infection of the skin. So people who have things like eczema or irritated skin, especially if they scratch at the skin, they're more prone to getting it. So obviously making sure that the skin is well looked after, that you're washing with a gentle wash, moisturising the skin very regularly to keep the skin healthy. And then if you do get impetigo and it's bacterial, it does require an antibiotic. But the important thing after that is skincare after that. So I always say to people of children with eczema, it's not just about treating it when the eczema flares, it's about the maintenance care of the skin.
Different listener, different question, but in the same vein, how long does it take to be referred by a doctor to a dermatologist in the public or private system?
Yeah, this is a difficult one, isn't it? So there is a system set up for what we call the National Pigmented Lesion Referral Scheme. So if you go to a GP and you have a mole that we are particularly worried about, we can refer you into one of a number of centres where they would see you ideally within a few weeks if your mole is deemed concerning. For more routine public dermatology referrals, the wait is well over a year, often longer than that, depending on where you are. Privately, we don't have as many dermatologists as we'd like to have, and there's a huge increase in people seeking dermatology care. So again, there are some private dermatologists, unfortunately, whose lists are closed. There is a company called Allview who are, it's actually some GPs who specialise in skin. And there are a lot of GPs, by the way, highly trained in the care of skin. There are GPs who specialise in skin care. So many GPs can sort many skin things. Okay. But you can go to Allview and they do an initial consultation kind of remotely, but they're actually, there's a whole load of dermatologists work with them, and then they can assess it and refer you on. Right. But that is private. That's not public, unfortunately.
Okay. Listener had a hemorrhoid that they've got rid of, but they now have a rash and inflammation has developed in the area. Is this common after hemorrhoids? I find it quite sensitive and itchy.
No, I suppose the short answer is no. Hemorrhoids are varicose veins in the back passage, and when they flare and when they settle, there's often a bit of loose skin left behind, but it shouldn't be sore. So it sounds like this person possibly has intertrigo, which is the medical term for a rash or infection in that area. Nappy rash would be one we're very familiar with in children, but adults can get it, and it causes the skin to be boggy and inflamed. That area tends to be warm and moist, and bacteria and fungus